I'd like to call on Mr. Ferry Carpenter at this time.
Well, I feel like the man from Mars. How did I ever get in here? What have I been listening to this morning? What is this problem that brings you here and that furrows your brow when you think about it? I don't belong here. But 40 years ago to a day, I belonged very much here in Grand Junction, because that was the first meeting ever held under the recently passed Taylor Grazing Act to see whether they could put the show on the road or not. I got my appointment on September 7th. On the 12th, I was here with no instructions what to do, and this is what I found. Grand Junction was packed with stockmen. The cattle boys had the La Court Hotel, and the wool growers had the Harp Hotel, and neither would speak to the other. There were so many of them, and the next morning, when we looked around for a hall, you couldn't begin to get them in any hall. We adjourned, went out on the city park here, and took over the exhibition building. Cowboys sat on one side with Frank Delaney and the sheep herders on the other with Dan Hughes and Wilson McCarthy. And we got open ready for business like a peace talk between two nations that had been fighting. And they had been fighting, and I knew they'd been fighting. What were they there to talk about? Why did Congress wake up and say they should have to drag grass into the conservation program? They put water in under the Reclamation Act, put trees under the Forest Act, put minerals and oils under the Mineral Reserve Act, but not the grass. Everybody could get the grass if you knew how to get it. All of a sudden, they passed the Taylor Grazing Act. The boys out here didn't know the act existed, but they were there to see that they got their share of the grass. And there was two factions, and they were ready to continue the war they'd been having for 50 years to fight over it. That's the wool growers and the cowboys. I didn't get any help from Washington what to do. There wasn't anybody in the whole department knew which end of a cow got up first. I went to the land office. I said, you want me to straighten out this land? Give me a map of it. Oh, we haven't got any map. There's filing on it day and night all over 27 local land offices. We haven't got any map. Well, how in the hell can I find the land if I haven't got a map? That's for you. That was for me. So when I came here, I said, I'm supposed to set up grazing districts. I don't know whether you want them or not. And I wouldn't know where they'd go in Washington. Nobody knows where they'd go. But you fellas been fighting over this thing. You know every blessed acre there is. And the poorer the acre, the harder you fight for it. I found that out, too. But I had one little piece of advice that I followed, and I'm going to follow it today until the end of my day. And it was a little saying by Justice Cordova on the Supreme Court. When the task is to clean house, it is sensible and usual to first consult with the inhabitants. Well, there I were, and there were the inhabitants. Cowboys sitting ready to jump, and the sheep herders ready to jump. Everybody at each other's throat, but they were the inhabitants. Well, they read a message from President Roosevelt. He said it was a great day for the West. Read a message from Secretary Ickes. He said he was the Lord's anointed. And then we got down to business. And they began asking me questions about the act, like how near it was near. I didn't know how near it was near. I didn't know the answer to them. But I did know what to do with them. So I said, all right, you old growers go out there and caucus and fix five men to speak for you. You cowboys do the same. We'll adjourn this meeting at 12 o'clock and come back at 2. Here's a map of Colorado. Here's some cranes. Mark out those districts if you want them. If you don't want them, write on it, we don't want anything to do with you. Okay, we adjourned. Came back at 2 o'clock. And then the mystery had been solved. The thing they said that couldn't be done. You couldn't make a cowboy and a sheep herder sit down and talk sense in the same room and agree on a sensible outcome. But they did. They marked it all out. Those districts are just as they remain today. They knew where the steep mountain was you couldn't get over. They knew where the water was. They knew the dry gulch. They knew everything about it. I began to see who could make this law go. Just these fellas right here that knew what they were talking about. The act said the secretary can make agreements with local associations. I didn't want any local associations. They're dominated by wealthy people, by people who don't run on the range. The people who run on the range are a whole different set of, whole different crew. They're the range stockmen. So I decided right then and there, they'd elect the people. And we would listen to all the big wool growers and big American National and all the rest of them, but just listen with our ears. And we'd let these fellas run on the range say what they wanted. That's what they call the district advisory system. Don't think Washington took that laying down. Oh boy, when we inaugurated those rules and sent them back, it created a commotion. So much of a commotion that when we went into gear and when 36 districts were formed and the temporary licenses were accepted and acted upon and the temporary licenses were issued, in 15 months, the whole 36 in 9 states, Arizona came in the next year, were complete. Nowhere in history has any federal reservation been organized like that. And only 3 appeals to the secretary. These birds took it. Why did they take it when they wanted more grass? Because they couldn't go up against the local board and lie like they could if they were signing an affidavit to go to the general land office. We put them on the spot and they had to take it. And it was very popular with Congress. Old Ed Taylor, bless his old heart, you know, he stood up in Congress and he says, we got home rule on the range. That went over good with Congress. Went over good with us, too. Didn't go over good with Ickes. Didn't go over good with the bureaucrats. And after we got them all set up and going down to Mexico, got a telegram report to the secretary, and I walked into his office a day later, and he says, you're fired. Okay, said I didn't have to have the job. But I said, Mr. Secretary, you got a setup you can't bust. He says, I'll see about that. So I went home to the hotel, I was packing my suitcase to go home, and Oscar Chapman called me up, and he said, Oscar was popular at the White House, Eleanor liked him, and he used to go over there a lot, called me up, and he says, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. He says, don't do it. I was over at the White House last night, and the president's office is flooded with telegrams from largely the wool growers. I was surprised at that. Saying that they better keep here or they'd all vote the other way. And Franklin knew all about that voting business. And so he immediately told Ickes, you take that prune back again. So the next morning I called the secretary's office and the old boy said he'd been thinking it over. He decided he liked me a lot better than he did before. And would I stay a little? Well, of course I ought to have told him, you lying son of a bitch. You can't get along with me at all. But I didn't. I stuck her out for 4 years, and it's no easy job to do when your boss is trying to forefoot you every time you turn, but you got there. But I had the backing of the stockmen, and I had the backing of the Western press, and I had the backing of the Western congressmen. And boy, we went to town. Gene Etchart's father was the chairman of the board in Montana. We invited all these chairmen, the sheep and the cattle chairmen, to come to Washington, and they came. And Mr. Ickes had to come in and tell him what a swell bunch there was. I thought his face would break when he did that. And we had to go over to the Oval Office, that Oval Office you've been hearing about. They just cleaned out the other day. Well, we went over there to see Franklin. And you know, I'll never forget it because Franklin is a smart boy, and he said, I want to shake hands with every one of these wonderful gentlemen that have left their home and are devoting their energy to solve this public range question. Said, I want all of them to come up here and I want to shake hands with them. Well, Ickes didn't know any of them. So he says, well, Carpenter, you come up and introduce them. And I did. And I want to tell you, when Franklin took your hand in both his hands, you melted. right then. And as we walked out, one fellow from Arizona, I remember, he said, I've been a lifelong Republican, but nobody could stand up against that fellow. Well, now, I just give you that little background. You boys have got a problem. You range stockmen are in deep water. You're walking around and you don't know where you're going to get, and you're outnumbered about 25 to 1. Because there's a new idea has come into the world that all public resources belong to all the people of all the United States. And if that is so, the gold in Fort Knox belongs to all of us, and I'm going down there and get a little chunk of it myself. My banker can use it. And the military supplies and other things belong to all the people of all the United States. Are we going to run a government like that? Why, that would be anarchy. This government is run by Congress, and Congress makes the selections. And Congress made the selection on the public land in the Taylor Grazing Act and said it was to rehabilitate the land, that takes money and brains and a little work, and to stabilize the livestock industry dependent on public lands for their use. That stands on the statutes today, that is the law, and every federal judge will have to enforce it. In the meantime, these people come along and they say the public lands belong to all the people of all the United States. The little barber in Delaware would like to have a little house site out here, just as well as anybody, and why should you let these stockmen walk off with all the grass? And then we've had this great upsurge of that we've been hearing about here, of everybody is going to analyze this thing and tell us what to do. As long as we are a democracy, Congress will say what to do. And they say how to do. And how did they do it? If the range stockmen were going to get the public lands, why there was twice as many as we could support on the public lands. How are we going to say which part of the range stockmen would get the public lands and which one would be turned back at the gate? Section 3 of the Act said preference in the issuance of grazing permits be given to those that have got private lands whose proper use requires the public lands. They got it. Just about a third of the range men got a right, and it increased their value, and you know what it's done to you. It's helped stabilize the business. People didn't hear that, and they didn't get the message, and they said it belongs to all the people of all the United States, and so the Act said had three objectives. One, rehabilitate the range. One, stabilize the Western livestock industry. Third, other purposes. What are other purposes? Well, we got some wild. The hunters off of them and protected them. The only reason we had any wildlife friend they ever had, that was another resource. We immediately recognized them, put a wildlife man right on all our committees and everything. And what were the other purposes? Well, there are just as many other purposes as there are people can stand up on their legs and say what they want to do. They want to put up windmills, they want to raise daisies, they want to do a whole lot of things. You name it. But you've got to come back to the old man Taylor Act. And what does it mean? Now, I feel like I've been talking 40 years ago. That's the way I talked to these dudes 40 years ago. But now 40 years has passed. And this world is entirely changed from what it was when I was in Grand Junction just 40 years ago today. What have we got? Conventional weapons are out the window. Nuclear power rules, and we've come to a stalemate. What's left is going to rule is energy. What is energy? Well, coal, oil, food. Where do we stand on energy? We're a little short on oil, ain't we? Arabia's got most of it. We're a little long on food, ain't we? Canada, United States, big exporters, feeding the world. What have we got to save to keep our sovereignty? We've got to save our position as surplus food makers. And we can trade with these fellas. And we've got to keep our cards close to our belly when we trade. We've got to know what we're doing. If it comes to a showdown, a man's got to eat before he turns on the electric light. Eating is fundamental. And as a part of the food production of the world, the range stockmen, the people using public lands, hold a key position. They're an integral part of it. And if they will show their position, they will be protected by Congress, they'll be protected by public opinion, because you want to eat even if you don't have gasoline for your car. And when the people that produce this energy, food energy I'm talking about, when they will state their case before the people, the way it was stated here today for everything else in this little chart, showing all the nice little things that could be done, why not put it out here that the Taylor Grazing Act is here to protect a segment of our food-producing part of the United States, which is the playing cards that we deal in world politics today, and that will the only thing that will preserve our sovereignty. What are some of these nations that haven't any food-producing capacity? Japan, England, Switzerland. Switzerland, the smallest nation, one in the world. Switzerland subsidizes their farmers way ahead of what we ever thought. You realize if you were over there juicing a cow, you could get $300 a year subsidy for just having one milk cow to pump twice a day. Why do they do that? The Swiss government knows if they lose their capacity to feed their people, their sovereignty disappears. They'll go down the sump hole with European politics. Every nation knows now that its sovereignty depends on its food. Mr. Hoover said food will win the war. Food will not only win the war, a specific war, but it'll win the long war that goes on for the people on this globe to live. And you gentlemen hold a key to it, and the key in legislation is the Taylor Grazing Act. Now let me go back 40 years. After 4 years of setting this thing up, Congress is afraid of Hickey, is afraid he'd can me again, so they made it a presidential appointment with a Senate confirmation, and the old boy couldn't kick me out. And he said, would you like to go? I said, would you like to have me? Oh, God, he said, you're a pain in the neck. And so I said, well, I'm ready to go back. My little farm needs me. What are you going to do with the advisory board? He says, I'll put them where they belong. Okay. Came to Denver, met a committee of the district advisors. What's going to happen to us? I said, you're on the way out. The old boy's going to can you. Now, they didn't sit around and listen to a whole lot of hoorah about what was going on in the government and how they were taken care of. They made a committee up. D. Brownfield was the chairman of it. They went to Washington and they said, we want these boards set in by law. And they did it. And it's there. And every federal judge in the United States will uphold it. And all these birds talking about shelving it and everything, they haven't read their law. They can get right there and maintain their position. And furthermore, Section 18 of that law says the Secretary of Interior can't do anything with grazing districts until it has been proposed by a district advisory board. Now, that's just plain law. I just want to remind you of it. Because while you are badly outnumbered, terribly outnumbered right here in this room, and you're wading around in deep water and don't know where the hell you're going, most of you. But nevertheless, you have this constitutional right, and you've got the Congress will go with you. They are composed of people that take practical views, and most of them don't know anything about the range country, but they've got a little drainage problem in Mississippi or somewhere, and they'll trade off with the fellows in the dry country, and you can be protected. But there's only one way that you can do it. You've got to have a little more public information about who you are and what you want. A fellow come out see me here a while back from Florida. His father sold out. He had his saddlebags full of money, and he was going to buy a ranch in Colorado. That's a great place, you know, to make an easy living in the livestock business. I took and showed him an awful good ranch, just what he wanted. Improvements were fine, the meadows were great, the cattle were wonderful. He had the dough ready to go. Said the fellow, now, you can make me a deed to this. Well, he says, I've got a forest permit here. It's good beginning July 10th till September 18th. I've got a Bureau of Land Management fall and winter pasture out here, and I lease some state land. He says, what's that you're talking about? I never heard of it. He says, I get a fee simple title to what I buy or I don't buy, and he turned and walked away. Those fellas don't know how we live. They don't know anything about this western land country. You've got to show people what you've got and where you sit and your importance in the food problem, which is the trump card of the United States for future development. Thanks, and I didn't run over my time either.